Okay, what's this all about?
It's a long story.
Oh, I bet it is, if she's got anything to do with it.
Trudy, please, let's just get them back to camp. There might be technos about.
Yeah, him. He's one of their generals.
Not anymore. I quit.
You did it. You really did it.
Jay's the Techno's public enemy number one. Ram's got the whole city on him. He wants him dead.
And what about you, Ebony? I thought you were all set up as the bride of Dracula.
I got myself a divorce.
So the Technos are after both of you now?
Afraid so.
Oh, great. And you had to come!
Rudy, please. Let's just get them back to camp.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 47 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hi.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 47. The screenplay was done by Anthony Reed. It was directed by Peter Nathan. And the episode synopsis put out by Liz.
Jay and Ebony receive a mixed welcome at the eco camp. Patch and Pride struggle with communication, and Ram tests Java.
All right, so Amber is pleased to learn that Jay finally left the Technos and invites them back to the camp, although Trudy and new character Hawk are uneasy. Once there, Ebony notices how well Jay is settling in and his connection with Amber. Though she makes it clear that they need to move on quickly, Amber keeps finding reasons for them to stay just a little longer. So yeah, panel, how did you react to the tensions in the eco camp?
I really liked Hawk. I think he made an instant impression. I also like the fact that he was wearing a kilt, which is something we haven't seen in Tribe World before.
Mm-hmm.
But he felt very capable. And
I positives. I like Hawk. I like his introduction. I like that he immediately has a presence. And I think the Ecos in general got an upgrade in the wardrobe department, which is interesting because they did a downgrade in the set design. But, you know, maybe they're nomadic. You know, maybe they're just nomadic now, which would make sense. But, you know, it's been mentioned that they switch camps depending on the season and stuff. But I wasn't impressed with this camp as much as the awesome tree houses and things like that. But as much as I wasn't as impressed with the set design this time, I thought there was something more realistic about the set compared to the tree houses that didn't exactly feel lived in. It looked cool, but didn't seem very lived in. So that's the positive. I thought they looked
very
good.
Short list.
It's very short list.
I was just thrilled with Hawk. I mean, as Tamsin said, the kilt, definitely a plus. And I guess I liked that he was more against them being there.
Yeah.
Like, why would you want these strangers from the city who are running from the Technos? And, well, one obviously originally a Techno himself because he hasn't even bothered to, you know, take the stupid face paint and everything off.
Does that mean we're going to go into the negatives?
No, but it's like, I'm so glad that Hawk was of the opinion of, why are you bringing these people here and you know them? It's like his response to Amber. So, you know, it's so clear. It's not the, oh, Amber says it's great, so it must be great.
Yes.
So obviously I'm loving that. And yeah, thinking about everything, I'm just happy someone agreed with Trudy. These people should not be here.
Yeah, Amber's survival instincts are they're so out the window, given what she's already experienced just in this mm-hmm. season alone. And keep in mind, we're talking someone who's barely even been around, but the time she has been trauma after trauma after trauma. And her reaction to these two, walking into their territory and clearly needing assistance and on the run is just, it adds to the crap pile of them shoving it in her face where the story's going. It's even more forced than Danny and Bray immediately meeting in the first episode of season two. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I already know where this is going and I'm pissed off about it. I haven't even grieved Amber or Zandra and you're shoving the replacement down their throat. And this felt exactly the same way, but even worse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot about this scene that I I mean, let's start with something we talked about way back in the start of season four. I hate how Amber always has to be the bigger person and forget everything that Ebony has done.
Yeah,
I really hate the narrative there. It's like Ebony hasn't, it's not really done, it's not really just a bad thing that she's done, so you can just be wash it under the bridge, it's fine, it's okay, Amber can be the bigger person. No, it's not. Ebony's like actions have directly caused Bray to disappear for starters. Like, I mean, there's a long laundry list of things you can go through. And like, no, that's, you shouldn't just be happy. Okay, yeah, we'll let you come and stay. No, why is it Trudy being the voice of they should not be here? That should also be Amber. Like, come on.
I mean, I think if you go further with that as well, Lance. I mean, it's not just that Bray disappeared. Amber went into premature labor. She almost died. And then as a result of not being in the city, she also got captured by the technos and was experimented on. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's horrendous what Ebony has actually done.
But we can't build on that. So that's why, yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, I'm agreeing with you guys. It's ridiculous when you go down the laundry list of what Ebony has done to Amber from the day they met. I mean, just in season one alone, she dangled her boyfriend over a balcony in order to get mm-hmm. the antidote from them. She left Amber to die on a mountain.
and that's just what she did to Amber.
and torpedoed her relationship in the process. You know, like, she drove them out of the city. She even sabotaged their chances of, you know, winning over the city. She didn't rescue Trudy and Amber from their kidnapping after she found out about it. Like, she led to the death of a young man when it didn't have to go down that way. Like you guys said, like, she's thrown out of the city and she has to have give birth in a barn. Her boyfriend, her baby daddy's kidnapped. She herself gets taken by technos and she greets Ebony with like, hey, what's up? You know, crazy running into you here. Hey, Trudy, I think you seem a little upset. Let's just chill. Like, bygones be gone. And it's like, are you friggin' serious here?
Yeah, but that's always the narrative. They always need to make it seem like Trudy is overreacting while actually she's being the more reasonable person here.
She is, absolutely is reasonable.
I'd also say as well that they always pull the Ebony card, the victim card for Ebony. Like, she you tried to steal my boyfriend, Amber. They were over years before he ever met Amber. And it's like, I'm so sick of this victim narrative for Ebony.
Not to mention, Ebony, you dumped Bray. Like, that's how this whole thing started. You dumped Bray, okay, because he wasn't strong enough to handle the virus, right? And like 9 months later, the guy moved on. Like, seriously. And ever since, she has acted like, Amber destroys all the loves of my life.
Yes, and it feels like that is a narrative that has been picked up by some people in the fandom, though, that Amber is somehow this character that just comes along and steals everybody's men. And, I mean, admittedly, we get to season five and that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But at this point, that is not the case. And it is a false narrative when it comes to Ebony.
Yeah.
That's how Ebony's always seen it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Ebony is the one that Bray took months to get over. The only one he took months to get over.
Did he take that long to get over her?
He was still salty when we met him in season one.
Yeah.
And oh, that's like 9 months later, he was still bitter about that breakup. Like, you dumped me from my little brother. I hate you. So, yeah, he's the one who took the time to get over her.
It's like he shoved Trudy onto his little brother. And when Ebony went that way, it was an issue.
Yeah, it also just annoys me that, okay, so Trudy's reacting the way we all agree you should. If you saw Ebony and Jay just coming out of the underbrush, you'd be like, what the frick are you doing here? You can't be here. This is dangerous for us, you know? And again, as you guys said, the narrative paints it like Trudy's overreacting and Amber's being the rational one here. And you know what makes me mad? If Trudy was angry for her own sake, if she was just pissed at seeing Ebony because of all the things Ebony's done to her, because the only list that's longer than what Ebony's done to Amber is what she's done to Trudy. Right?
Yeah.
And, like, that's the only list that's longer. But no, Trudy's not mad because of the things Ebony has done to her. Trudy's mad because of the things Ebony has done to Amber.
Which is just ridiculous. I get her not wanting Ebony there when it comes to, you know, this girl made sure that when my baby was kidnapped, I was kidnapped as well. You know, it's she's done so much against Trudy. And
it's the theme that we've picked up again and again when we've talked about basically Trudy has been relegated to a side character, an accessory that goes along with Amber. And yeah, that's her, that's all she is in the story. And I think, Sabine, you have said this really eloquently before, that you feel that it's because of the way that Trudy feels about her involvement in The Chosen. And I also think maybe some of the fandom backlash against her as well. So yeah. Maybe she doesn't put herself and how she feels forward, so she puts Amber forward.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, it makes Amber look better. You know, that's the whole point. You know, Amber is, you know, unbothered, and Trudy's the one who is rightfully calling out that, why would we trust this person? Why would we help this person? You know, it's dangerous. Even if it wasn't about not liking Ebony, it's still dangerous, you know, to even bring this. Amber, our babies are there. Are you freaking kidding me? You know, we already know what the Technos are willing to do to us. And yeah, it's
supposed to be. And what Ebony is willing to do to us.
Right, exactly. Like, we cannot trust that she wouldn't throw the Gaians under the bus if it meant it got her in good with the Technos. I know that we, the audience, know that Ebony probably wouldn't, because she burned all those bridges. But they have no reason to believe that she wouldn't do that to them.
If anything, they have every reason to believe she would do that to them.
Yeah. And I mean, in a way, I think one time, Liz, you made this really great comment. I mean, you make so many, but I'll pick this one out of the bunch, that you said that it's interesting the words that they give certain characters to speak when they're talking sense. And it feels like Trudy now is in the same position as Lex. So Lex will often say, oh, we shouldn't trust them. But it's always got a sort of, you're inclined to disbelieve him. You're inclined to not go along with him. His voice of objection is to be put down, even though it's probably the reaction that a lot of the audience have. And it feels like Trudy's in that box with Lex when it comes to this.
And what gets me is that Hawk is the only one who's upset at seeing a Techno. Like, he doesn't really give a crap about Ebony, but he is rightfully annoyed to be seeing Jay, who has the audacity, the whole grain, gluten-free audacity to look Hawk in the face and say, I quit the Technos, with a gigantic Techno symbol on his forehead.
And now what do? They get his bloody Techno outfit back.
Oh, God, like, yeah.
I quit, but I couldn't be bothered to wash my face to show my commitment to quitting.
And I want my outfit back.
And I want my outfit back.
That was ridiculous.
I mean, you can understand Ebony to some extent. I mean, no. But they just, like, let him keep the lilac shirt on. It's fine.
Is that right? Just wear that. Color.
Yeah, just wear that.
I know. The symbol of your oppressors, I'm going to put it back on. Don't worry.
It's so strange that they don't take this opportunity to give both of them a costume change because they're literally on the run, right? So why would you want to still wear your most recognizable outfits?
It makes no sense.
I get it. You don't want to stay in the scarecrow clothes. They're gross. They're disgusting. They're dirty. They probably don't fit well. Fine. But it's like you're telling me that the Guyans couldn't throw together some spare clothes for them. They had to retrieve their clothes from the scarecrows because there was nothing else they could wear. Are you kidding me? Did you see what these people are wearing? They've got clothes to spare. Okay. And it doesn't make any sense that they don't take this opportunity to change their look a little bit because we're on the run.
I'm going to press the missed opportunity button here. And I'm going to say it was a missed opportunity for us to redefine Jay's character outside of the technos by seeing him in a different tribal style.
Yeah. He never again changes, does he?
No.
He never changes again. That's it.
That's crazy.
Ever linked to the technos. The Techno J, that's he is. And they had a great opportunity to kind of redefine him as a rebel and do that in his clothing, because clothing is so important in this universe.
Okay. Genuine question here. Why did they not do that? Why did they just forever link J as a techno by not changing his uniform? I don't understand why.
No idea.
What's the reason?
No idea.
It's odd. You want to push him as a Morat now? Why did he not change his clothes?
It'd be like the easiest form of storytelling. Like, right. I mean, it's already lazy enough trying to say that Jay left the technos, you know, even though he advocates for them all the way through season 5. But the easiest way to visually convince a child audience that he's not a techno would to literally just change his clothes.
Yeah.
That's crazy that they never do that. Just never.
So recognizable like this.
Like, think about Amber. When we meet her again in season 3, she's wearing something that is distinctly different than what she wore when we first met her in season 1, what she'd wore in the city. You know, she's got a lot of these natural, like, peacock colors, all that stuff, because it's speaking to her living out in nature, right? And she wears that throughout season 3. And when she makes the decision to stay and be with the Mallrats again, she literally gets an outfit change. They're throwing a party. They have an excuse. And so her and Trudy changed their outfits. But it also visually signifies they're leaving the old life behind, starting a new one. It's just a simple little thing. And it's not like he had a complicated wardrobe. He was wearing a boiler suit, for Pete's sake. Just get the guy some chaps and, you know, just put him in something else. I don't get this.
There's no reason why you couldn't have kept the bottom half of his outfit and just changed the top half. If we were struggling for budget, if we were struggling for costume, you know, you could have kept the bottom half and done something different with the top half. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'd also say with Amber's change, so in season 1, we predominantly see her in blacks and dark greens and browns. But when she returns in season 3, she gets this pop of colour in her wardrobe that never really leaves. Because even when we see her now, she's wearing, you know, that bottle green. So that's really interesting, Liz, to just add further to your suggestion about her costuming. Colour becomes really important, and that never goes away. And it kind of straddles the fact that, yes, she's a Mallrat, but not how she used to be.
Java as a techno literally changes her hair, like, on the reg, you know?
Yeah.
And this guy who quit the technos never changes his look and is surprised when people call him a techno. He's surprised when they call him a techno. He's offended when they call him a techno.
It's just, you know, Siva had outfits to pretend to be a vert. Fed had them. So why on earth didn't Jay?
Yeah. Sorry, you go, Liz.
No, go ahead, sweetie.
I was just going to say, you've opened the conversation about Jay, but are any of us going to also mention in series 5, Ram does exactly the same thing? He's trying to lie low in Liberty, but he never changes out of his techno uniform. I mean,
in his mild defense, he never said he left the techno.
Yeah.
They are looking for him.
Yeah, but again, in mild defense, he never claimed to have left the Technos. He was ousted. He wanted his kingdom back, you know. But true, yeah, it's funny that you are in hiding. Why are you still wearing the getup? But the most egregious thing about this scene that will never be forgiven, and it's over. Any chance that this season had of having a decent story and it coming together at the end is just, you just shot yourself right in the bollocks with this. It's the eyes that Jay and Amber are making at each other. It's how happy she is to see him, how happy he is to see her, and how obvious it is that the story, the love story that we've been following for an entire season that finally just came to its climax 2 episodes ago, you've already decided it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's clear. It's quite clear here. They've decided this is it. That's over. <Yeah. laughs> On to That's Amber awful. And Jay. And I hate
it. They're literally stunned at the sight of each other. Stunned.
Amber's all like, I'm worried about you. I was worried about you. Why?
Why were you worried about this guy?
Come on, writers. Come on.
I was so worried about what would happen to you. Like, are you kidding me? When you left, you weren't even sure that this guy actually was a decent guy. You
had no idea.
He was a decent guy. Okay? You like, I hope that you won't turn from the truth when you finally see it. But that is what you left with. And here you're acting like you guys were genuine friends when you were last in the city, that you spent time being concerned about this guy. What about the rest of your friends? Yeah. Were you concerned about any of them?
She never once asks about Celine or Pride, for that matter.
Well, but also, I mean, the other thing is that they paint this picture that Amber and Jay have got this connection because Ebony clocks it and she's so instantly jealous. And it's like, for God's sake.
I hate it. I hate where it's going to go. Why?
I think we all hate where it's going to go.
Why did you do this? And you didn't have to do this.
And if you absolutely had to do it, why do it like this so quickly?
Yeah, I agree
with
you.
No, there was actually no reason to do it. I refuse to believe there was any reason to do this.
If they wanted to go down that road, Lance, I agree with Sabine. There were other roads to go to in which to do this.
Before this.
But we didn't need this road at all. This road didn't need to exist.
We all agree.
This road.
No, we wanted bypass away from this road, ideally.
We didn't need this road. We didn't want him to be with True if Ebony. Yeah, there were so many other options, but why? Why, Amber? The one character, why?
And it's so bizarre that in these next few episodes, Ebony is going to be treated like her reaction to Jay's behavior is weird. Like, it's bad. Like, her being jealous or thrown off is bad. And it's like, no, her reaction is perfectly rational considering how he's behaving as soon as they arrived here. Like, have you seen Jay play with children before? Has he ever come across as that kind of guy who's that friendly with the locals? We've just spent an entire year with him in the city. Did you see him being that buddy-buddy with anybody? But all of a sudden he's with the Guyans and he's just like this, like he's a completely different person who suddenly doesn't want to go on this journey. Like immediately he flipped a switch. As soon as he saw Amber, they're plan to keep going, he's not committed to it anymore. No wonder Ebony is like, what the F? What is going on?
Let's go. Yeah. Let's
it's
go.
Instant. It's not even like a couple of moments to re-register what's going on. Just instantly, yeah, that's it. I'm staying. I don't know what Ebony's doing, but I'm staying.
Yeah, he's just unconcerned with her plans. And it was like, oh my gosh. Like, that's why I said, I'm like, as soon as he got what he wanted from her, he was instantly bored. And I was just like, I don't understand. And I do agree with Lance. Like, we never needed this. It didn't need to do it this way. But I agree with Tamsin and Sabine that if you were going to do it, there were better ways to get, you know, end Ebony and Jay and get Jay with Amber. There were better ways to do it. They picked the worst way.
Can I also just segueing from that slightly? I just want to say, Trudy and Hawk, they've got chemistry. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a big shipper of those two.
That's what we want.
Talk about roads not taken. Why did we not take that road?
Because Trudy isn't allowed true happiness.
She's not allowed to be happy?
I was going to say, she needs to suffer a bit, so we're going to fuck with Jay.
They make Trudy suffer for 5 whole seasons. Are you kidding me? Trudy's not allowed a season of happiness.
Nope.
Nope. Somebody really hit that girl.
Every season, there's like, it's themed around how we could destroy Trudy. And season 4 is probably the only time she doesn't suffer because she's not around.
Well, I mean, it's worse.
Kidnapped.
She's just not there. So she doesn't get to suffer in season 4 because she's literally not around.
Season 4, honey. The moment she's back, they make her suffer.
Yeah.
They take away her kid.
Yeah, I was just saying.
They're like, who's her favorite trauma victim? She's back.
Time to kidnap the baby.
It goes beyond the series, though, because if you read the books, it's not fun for her either. You know?
I know. Somebody really hated her.
They really did. She's literally introduced to us already traumatized.
Yeah.
She's already going through it. And it never stops. It's never ending for poor Trudy. Girl can't get a win to save her life. Oh my gosh. She should have just stayed with the Guyans. It was the only time she was happy. She should have stayed with the Guyans and hooked up with Hawk, and they would have been fine.
Yeah. But that's the thing with this, though, isn't it? I understand narratively the writers want to punish Trudy for just existing. But in terms of narrative, this is where it all kind of falls down. And it's the same problem with the forcing of Amber and Jay and then the forcing of Trudy to be constantly like a repentant Madonna. It's not the right story strands to pick up at all. And it feels so forced. It feels inorganic and it's lazy.
And that's just the beginning of this episode. What a way to start. Like, we are still in the first talking point, guys.
It goes wild from here.
Oh my goodness. This whole episode was just a WTF for me. Like, what am I watching?
I can't wait to get to the next bit.
Oh.
I have thoughts.
I actually, for the audience at home, before we started this, sometimes we share a short blurb of how we feel about an episode, you know? And so I had posted, I don't know what I just watched. I don't know what this was, right? And so everyone's kind of poking in their little things from the episode that were just kind of weird or amusing. And I was like, the wheels have come off. And Damson goes, there were wheels?
Yep.
Which I was like, that's perfect. Yeah, it's true. Like, were there ever any wheels in this season?
No.
No.
Ram asks Java to bring Ved to him, but she can't find him anywhere.
I don't think you understand. There could be a problem with Ved.
Oh.
I've checked his quarters and the operations room, but there's no sign of him anywhere.
Then where is he?
That's a very good question.
Ram, however, seems unbothered and unsurprised, telling her that Ved is in his hard drive trash and he can bring him back whenever he wants, if he wants. He then goes on to test her loyalty by immersing her in an extreme reality-based version of Siva's life with Lex. Following this, Java does confirm that she wants to be with Ram. So a lot to go through there, panel. What do you make of Ram's relationship with Java? And obviously, the off-screen fate of Ved.
What the actual...
Who wants to go first?
Perfect summary. What the...
What is any of this?
Well, I just wanted to say, there's a lot to unpack, in particular, in the Ram and Java scene. Because I think there's two ways that you can actually read this. So, the first way is the most obvious way, which is, you know, they've got this very, it's sub and dom relationship that we kind of felt like we knew that they had before, but they really lean into this, and this is so sexualized that I really don't think it's appropriate for children. And then the other side of it is that he kind of alludes to the fact that this Ved is already, like, she comes to him and she says, I can't find Ved anywhere. And you get the sense that she knows that he's disappeared Ved. He will later confirm that in this episode. But at this point, it's kind of an illusion that he's done this. So when he is tempting her with Lex, tempting her with reality space, trying to get her essentially to crack, I think the other way that you can look at it is that she already knows that Ved has been disappeared. And I think you could see it as, if she doesn't play along with him and say the things that he wants her to say, Ram is in the sort of mood that she could easily end up in the trash with Ved. And I think you can look at the scene both ways.
Absolutely.
But it is, I mean, it's so unnecessary. And like you said, Liz, like, what is this? What is this? I mean, we're not really getting any new information about either of these characters. We already knew they had this kind of relationship. And it just, it was really uncomfortable to watch because they play it so well.
This whole scene had me thinking, how on earth did they get this approved for the audience it's for?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that. I mean, when you think that they, some of the things that they've cut from the show previously, but yet they left this in. But then they also left the threesome in at the start, didn't they?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, so this is like, this is totally fine. But next season we have to cut things.
This is like next level though. Like he forced Avatar Lex onto her. Like, we probably didn't see what else went on, where else that was going. That was just,
it was,
that was, oh.
It's just bizarre, the choices that were made throughout this entire thing. Like, okay, why is Siva receiving sexual pleasure just from attention? Because, it's very overt. Her facial expressions, her breathiness, even her tongue action that's going on. And then you see what she's experiencing, and it's just, she gets out of a fancy car. She looks amazing. Everybody's like, wants her attention. She's, you know, putting her hands in what, you know, their equivalent of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And it's like, why would you be getting aroused by this? Why is that the choice that you went with? That's it's a weird choice. Not to mention, Ram hasn't sexualized Java since the first episode. Like, for him, the way he's treated her, the way their relationship has been, their dynamic has been almost asexual, bordering on hatred. And so it's like, where did this come from? Why is he suddenly sexualizing her again? This needed to be explored. And of course, I get what they're trying to do with Ram. They're trying to do the leader whose kingdom is crumbling. And so they're like going off their rocker with their paranoia and the unhinged behavior, but they've done it better. They literally did it last season with Jaffa. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that's what they're kind of doing with Ram, but none of this works. And it's like, even him getting rid of Ved. Why though? What did Ved do?
Yeah. That's the question. Why now? Why now?
Right, because off last episode, just frustrating.
Like, last week, your subconscious was telling him, we're all going to live in cyberspace together. All of a sudden, he's disposable. And it's like, what did he do except be a little worried about his brother? Like, that is his crime. Now, I'm not saying that Ved hasn't done things that could have led to Ram wanting to get rid of him before. Mm-hmm. But in this span of time, the only thing he's done is show that he was concerned about his brother being on the run, you know? And it's like, that's what drove Ram over the edge to get rid of him. One of his smartest, one of his brightest, one of the people he wanted to be in cyberspace with forever. What is going on? And it's like, this is not how you write unhinged behavior. You need to explore it. You know, you got to take the time. You can't just have him acting like a weirdo for a whole episode and we're convince me, oh, this is realistic. Yeah. He's going off the deep end. I buy this, you know, it's just so weird.
This is where the show has gotten us to now. I'm going to have to ask the question. Is Ved trapped in Ram's actual hard drive? Or is he like, trapped in various space in a vegetative state somewhere? You know what I mean? Like, I have to ask the question now, right?
He's trapped. He's trapped.
I don't know anymore.
He was just in a prison camp. I thought this was a euphemism.
Was it euphemism? Like, yeah. I'm just not sure anymore. This is what the technos have done to me.
Yeah.
Like, to me, it feels, with what Ram is saying right now, that he simply straps Ved into a reality space headset somewhere against his will.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, so who's changing Ved's diapers? Because he still needs his physical body, still needs to be cared for. Like, that's
right.
It just seems weird that you had so many chances to get rid of Jay, who openly defied you and staged a coup. You could have done this, but Ved, that you just like, oh, he had to go. Like, your choices of who has to go and who you just let get away with stuff makes no sense. Mm. If you're willing to do this to Ved at this point in your story, why are the mole rats still alive?
Yeah.
That's the age-old question. Oh. Why are they alive?
If this is what you do to your enemies, I mean, at least Jaffa, when he was inconsistent about who he punished and who he didn't, they explored the reasons why.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you could agree or not agree, but it didn't come out of nowhere why some people were put to immediate death and why others he hesitated and pulled back on it. You know what I mean? Like, there was a reason for the choices he was making as to who went and who didn't until the end when he was like, we're all going. I can't handle that I'm losing a grip on everything, so I'm taking everybody with me so I don't have to be proven wrong. You know, but before that, you'd have these moments where it was like, okay, you know, I he's a moment to, like, one person doesn't get bowed down fast enough, they get thrown off a roof. Alice goes at him, he thinks about killing her, and then, but she ended up challenging him in front of everybody. And so he couldn't kill her like that. You know what I mean? Like, there were reasons why he didn't act on his impulse to just off everybody who got on his nerves. But this is like,
whereas Danny,
sorry, she went in the first invasion. That wasn't even personal. It was just collateral damage.
She was annoying.
But yeah, it's just like, this is his slide into madness. One episode. Okay.
We never get a reason for Ved
disappearing. Are we sure he didn't just put Ved somewhere in cyberspace because Ved refused to be there with him for eternity?
Okay, here's a conspiracy theory. Now, we know why Chloe was pulled from the show, and we've speculated why she was taken and Dan wasn't, simply because they both had gone and done this thing and it seemed like one person was punished and one wasn't. And then we've wondered, well, maybe she had warnings. Maybe this was her third strike. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there was contention behind the scenes and that's why she got let go right away. But Dan wasn't, they kept him. And so I kind of wonder if through the rest of this season, things were happening behind the scenes with Dan as well. And they just made this sudden executive choice to get rid of him, because his vanishing after keeping him, it doesn't make sense. And it doesn't trace back to that day that he and his co-star disappeared. You know, it's like something else had to have happened for them to suddenly now decide he's got to go. With no explanation. Yeah.
And I would agree with that, because they had multiple times in which, I mean, okay, so if we look at it like this, Ben's character was more crucial to the story than Chloe's. So I can understand why Chloe was gotten rid of faster than the character of Ved, but there were plenty of points where they could have cycled out and just gotten rid of him because, you know, his story is now done. Arguably, the lightsaber battle would have been the time to have gotten rid of him if it was still for that first offense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I think you've got something there.
I don't know, yeah. Just from previous interviews and stuff that we've done with him and things I've picked up, I've not seen anything else that's been hinted at, but you just don't know, yeah.
Plan for a follow-up, Lance.
I mean, it's possible they just can't talk about it. You know, they do have them sign things like non-disclosure agreements and things like that. And But I'm just like, this is weird. This is weird that this is when you decided to get rid of him.
Yeah, this point.
Or an incident that happened in the first third somewhere of the season, and you got rid of the other co-star right away, and you kept him and built up his story, only to just, bloop, he's gone. And it's like, what is, with five episodes to go? Like, I don't understand this.
Was it just spite? Yeah, was it just, you built him up just to cut him out? Like, I don't know.
I could see that level of pity.
Right, it does feel a bit like that. It really does.
I could definitely see that level of pity, though.
Very, very weird.
Going back, though, to the point that you picked up, Liz, about why Java was getting aroused by attention, is it because the only storyline that she's really had is that she longs to be more important than Ebony, so attention's does something for her? I don't know.
Maybe.
And it's crazy because there's actually, you know, this scene with her and Ram and their weird dynamic energy that's happening could have been set up and have been happening the whole time. You could have explored the kind of power imbalance and creepy arousal kink that they both seem to have, and the way he plays with her and plays with her emotions and plays with her through sexuality. And you could have been doing that the whole season. And then this would make sense because it'd be like, this is just their power play. This is how he controls her. This is how he's constantly testing her. But when he treats her with basic indifference and disdain for most of the season, like, this really does come out of nowhere.
I mean, I would argue, though, I think we have seen sort of hints of this in their dynamic. But yeah, I agree with you. This has come full blown out of nowhere.
Yeah, I don't know what they were thinking when they wrote this scene.
It kind of reminds me.
It's like some booger sugar was in the writer's room, I'm telling you.
Well, it kind of reminds me of bits with Java and Tysan. Obviously, they couldn't go as far as they've been able to go with this. But there's a thread there, isn't there, of a similarity?
Yeah. Absolutely.
This is like Gremlins 2 crack served writing. You know what I'm saying? Like, like, if you ever watched Gremlins 2 and you heard the discourse of the jokes of how many drugs had to have been in that writer's room when they pitched that movie. And this is from the, I love the movie, by the way. I just want to make that clear. I don't hate Gremlins 2, but it is bad. Ish. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy. And it's like, that's the level of writing we are, just in this scene alone. Like, have you been watching the show? Who wrote this?
Mm. Also, who wrote this for a target audience of children?
Yep.
I mean,
who okayed this?
Let's not get away from that.
I'm still stuck in who okayed this.
Because, I mean, if you were writing this, if you were writing this for adults, then you could say, oh, okay, fine. I mean, you needed to shade in a bit of their relationship, maybe. Let's take it in this direction. But this is for children.
And again, there's nothing leading up to it. There's nothing being said about it. You know, there's no commentary on what any of this is. So, yeah, it's just, it's kind of this weird subliminal blip that you're just like, was that a penis? You know what I mean? Like, what did I just see on the screen? What was that?
Was this the point where they said, okay, we need a new show like this targeted at a younger audience. Maybe this is what caused us to get the new Tomorrow.
And I kind of wonder, now, because of the scenes outside of reality space with Java's reactions and the highly sexual energy that's happening between her and Ram compared to what's actually being shown in cyberspace, I kind of wonder if something else was written to be happening in cyberspace. Like, I think maybe there was supposed to be more attention on the sexual relationship happening between her and Lex. You know what I mean? Because again, that would at least explain her arousal. That would explain why she's, you know, gaining pleasure from it and wants more, and then has to be like, no, I don't want that life with Lex. I want to be with you. And somebody said that's taking it too far. And they had to change up what the visual was, because they remembered this is for children. Like, what's a frick? But something tells me now that it was probably like more Skinemax happening behind that helmet. And, oh boy.
And I just want to remind everybody, this is episode 47, and we see Java. Java is deeply in love with Ram. Deeply. We're going to get a sudden 180 out of nowhere.
I know, this girl's like smudging her mascara in love with him in this episode.
Like, unless she's the most brilliant actor ever, like, that was real. Like, she was like, no, I can't live without you, Ram. Like, what we're gonna get?
This is like, unless we're supposed to view this as a taste of what will happen to her, what she will be tormented with for eternity if she were to straight away head it.
Yeah, I also think maybe she's not completely married to the idea of going into reality space.
She said, well, she clearly isn't. Stay
here. Yeah, she isn't, but she does love Ram. We can say that clearly. Like, she loves Ram.
It makes you wish her consistency with her made sense.
Yeah,
because I'm like, okay, this episode she's deeply in love, she's in conflict, she don't want to lose her man, but she wants to make sure her man gets taken care of, but she herself doesn't want to be there with him, but that means not being with him at all, you know. And it's wild. It's wild.
Oh man. Before we get to our daily pride bashing, let's take a detour to the mall. So Adee is disappointed when Patch is unable to talk to her about his feelings.
Been doing a really good job here.
I couldn't manage without you, you know? You just...
Yeah, but you, I mean, you're the one who...
No, I need you to know... I mean, we...
Yes, we?
We really need more painkillers, you know?
And he goes to Lex, of all people, for advice. Predictably, it backfires spectacularly in everyone's eyes, but Lex's. Just briefly, what did you make of those scenes, panel?
Oh my god.
It reminded me so much of Lex and Jack.
Yeah, because it's the exact same scene that we keep getting of Lex giving some naive, hapless guy the worst advice to get a girl. It never freaking works. Heck, you know what's really annoying? This advice has never even worked for Lex. I don't know why they keep doing this stupid scene over and over and over again.
And it's always but I never have this problem. Because girls just love me.
Which is a lie.
Like, this isn't how you want either of your wives or your current girlfriend. Why are you giving out this advice? Like, at least give out advice that works for you. I love it if Lex was like, well, you want to get a girl, be a hot mess because ladies love to fix things or something. That would be consistent with his personal experience. But no, he gives advice that he doesn't even do and it works out for him. Ever.
But, I mean, you both, it's the same scene, like you said, both of you, it's the same scene replayed over and over again. And it just serves to underline the fact that this entire season 4, Lex could have been absent and it wouldn't have changed anything.
Oh my gosh.
And it's to make us, it's to remind us that Patch is a replacement for Jack.
So sad.
But worse than that, if Lex had not been here, we still could have got Siva coming to the mall for another reason, leaving the Technos. But he didn't need to be here. He could have been shipped out with Tyson.
That's how little impact he's had, in this whole season. You're absolutely right.
The only good thing I can say about the scene will be Dee's acting. I think the actress does a fantastic job expressing, like, just look at her face, look at her eyes as she's looking at Patch. You can see the hopefulness, the yearning, you know, like, okay, is he gonna actually elaborate on declaring his love to me. You know, is this going somewhere? And then the disappointment as what comes out of his mouth isn't the guy she even recognizes, you know, and just, she's not even mad. She's just disappointed. Like she was getting her hopes up, allowing herself to feel these feelings for him, even if she doesn't fully understand them, and so eager to hear what he has to say to her. Just please say something. And that's what he says. And that's the only good thing. It was her performance. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And it was also,
and she must have known he was listening to Lex.
Well, not necessarily. I don't think that is necessarily implied. But I think the thing about Dee is she's reached this perspective that she does have these feelings for Patch, and she's kind of opened herself up. She's been quite vulnerable, and she's waiting for him to at least give her, like you say, any sort of insight into how he feels.
I just hate it that these guys always feel like they need to go to Lex for advice on how to deal with women.
I know.
I mean, why would you? I mean, it would have been better if we had seen Patch maybe go to Siva.
Yeah, she might have actually given him decent advice.
Well, I think she would have given him good advice.
Anybody, even Pride, could have given better advice. Hey, don't get addicted. Don't steal her jewelry. Don't lie to her. That would have been good advice that Pride could have given him. You know,
just a simple don't lie to her. Be honest.
But it doesn't make sense for Patch to go to Lex in the first place. You know, one, Patch was portrayed as more emotionally intelligent. Yeah, he may be socially inept at times, but he wasn't a doofus. It made sense when Jack went to Lex. It made sense when Ryan went to Lex. Heck, it may even make sense in season 5 when Sammy goes to Lex. Oh God, we're going to have to see the scene again. Anyway, it makes no sense that Patch looks at Lex, has been observing this guy since he showed up, and, you know, is like, yeah, this guy knows how to get women. Just because he has a girlfriend does not mean, like, you've watched he and Siva's relationship and you understand that it's a complicated undercurrent and it doesn't make any sense to pretty much anybody but them, and that's their business. But it doesn't make sense that Patch would go to him.
Mm.
It doesn't make sense that Patch would hear his advice and be like, oh yeah, that sounds good. That makes total sense. It makes about as much sense as Patch out of the blue forcing advice onto Sammy. Like, what?
I was just about to say that.
Sammy isn't even interested in girls yet. Like, why? Sammy's even looking at you like, why are you sharing this with me? Like, it's just weird. I hated it just for the repetitiveness and how unnecessary the scene is. It serves no purpose except, and it's like, it doesn't serve a purpose because all you have to do, if you want this moment where Dee is hoping that Patch will say more to her, and we know that Patch is struggling to say, all you have to do is have him fail to say anything. Like, he's determined to, and then he can't, the words don't come out of his mouth, and he says something awkward. That's all you needed. You don't need Lex's involvement in that at all.
Mm.
Patch is perfectly awkward on his own. He doesn't need Lex's absurd help. I also wanted to tell him, Patch, the reason you don't have any medication is because you're literally giving these kids, like, double doses of pain medication in Tribe World. Mm-hmm. It's the apocalypse, dude. Sometimes you have to tell these kids to just suck it up. You know, you got a boo-boo and it's gonna hurt, okay? This is why you got no pills and medicine left, dude. You give pain pills to people who are literally dying in pain. And you're like, well, maybe this will ease their suffering before they pass over. You give them the morphine, right?
But I want to just mention, he said, take two of these, then take another two in 4 hours. But if that is paracetamol, it has to be 6 hours, not two. Because if it's two paracetamol or whatever a painkiller we're taking, it needs to be 6 hours. If it's one paracetamol, it needs to be four. He's overdosing that young boy.
Oh my gosh. I miss the days where it was like, like that's literally the only thing they had to get Trudy through childbirth. Like, back in the day when they actually paid attention to the shortage of medication you'd have in this world, that something as simple as, you know, something for a headache, it was the only thing they could offer Trudy while she was birthing a child. But nope, Patch is just handing them out willy-nilly because I'm a little sore from that riot I got into in the street of my own volition.
Yeah, well, You shouldn't have done that then. They'll teach you.
Like, here, I'm here to stitch you up. I'm here to deal with your concussion, okay? If you're sore, lay down. Sleep it off, buddy. Here's an ice pack.
Don't get into fights.
I also want to add as well that you've all said, you know, we're not that far from the end now. We're like 5 episodes. And I think it was you, Liz, who mentioned in the past that you feel like they've already decided that they're going to get rid of Dean Patch for season 5. My mm-hmm. question then is, this is Patch asking Lex for advice with D just for it to go horribly wrong. When actually I would have rather had them become a couple now than see that off screen, because that's essentially mm-hmm. what happens. And I would rather have seen that now.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how to have relationship tension. They don't know how to do that. I mean, they know, but they don't want to bother with the effort. And so the only thing they can do is string out how long it takes for the couple to get together or involve a third party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing is, they would only have literally 4 episodes left, or 4 or 5 episodes in which to see them as a couple. And they're in it so irregularly that you could have gotten away.
You could have just had them holding hands, you mean?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, you could have had that love declaration.
Yeah, and just holding hands throughout the rest of the shots they have with them.
Like, literally, what's the point of having Patch declare his love in the middle of chaos if they're going to continue bumbling along?
Yeah, exactly. That's
what is the point?
Yeah. This
is pointless.
It's like we now have to focus on Amber and Jay, so we have no time for other couples anymore.
It's like he could have, you know, said, I love you during the fight, and then they could have spent these episodes like her, did you mean what you said? And yeah, I did. Are you sure you meant it? You didn't just say it because you thought you were going to die? Well, I mean, I did think I was going to die, but I meant it, you know, just did it, and then boom, like, mm-hmm. and they could just spend the next 5 episodes together. It's not like we don't have enough ridiculous angst to deal with.
I was just going to say, we have so much going on in our next segment as well. So, like, there's enough to go around.
Yeah. And they seem not to want to do anything with Lex and Siva. And they don't want to really do anything with Dee and Patch. There are no functional relationships in this. Whereas in the past, we at least got 1 or 2 relationships that were just in the background, we'd see them together, they'd be okay while drama went on.
We're not allowed that anymore.
Well, we were given subtlety into the different relationship dynamics that people have depending on their age and their personalities. You know, some people are a little bit more volatile, some people a little more dramatic, some people, their conflicts are pretty innocent because they themselves are innocent. But you got a nice plethora of them, and there were reasons that there was friction in the relationships, different for each relationship. They all had their own thing kind of going on. So you get a nice smorgasbord, you know, and picking your favorites and which relationship you root for and which one you hope dies in a fire. Here, it's just chaos across the board. And even the one relationship that sees you working out, which is Lex and Siva, we spent most of it being like, how does he even feel about her? Like, we're not sure.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, Lex and Siva are the only couple at this point that aren't experiencing serious issues and have not broken up.
And it's like a low bar they've had to reach. It's just because everybody else is insane.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. On that note, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So Pride agrees to a meeting with May, but avoids talking about the two of them, saying that he still needs time to get over his reality space addiction, which frustrates May. Later, he bumps into Sammy and returns to the mall with him. Knowing that Sammy went out to play the game, Celine thinks that Pride is still being dishonest with her. He later comes to tell her it's over, without specifying what, and she agrees, telling him to get out. So yeah, what do you make of Pride?
Okay, first I'll address the situation with he and May. Why are they not going to explain why May suddenly cares about her relationship with Pride? Why now? Why are they not going to express to us or explain to us why May didn't care when she came back, but now she cares? Like, we deserve an explanation. Was it that she now remembers because she heard Amber's name and suddenly it all came flooding back? You know, because she is talking to him like nothing, like she's talking to him as though she came back yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that she's been back and completely uninterested in him or Celine. Suddenly she wants to talk about their relationship and there's no explanation why she wants to talk about it now. And Pride has the audacity to act like, you know, again, even he should at the least be confused. Like, why do you suddenly care? I mean, you've been back for a while, May. It's obvious I'm with Celine. Sorry things didn't work out with us, but you were taken. And, you know, like, da-da-da. But no, he's also behaving as though there's been no break in their relationship and she just got back yesterday and he owes her an explanation, but he doesn't want to give it to her. I need time. What do you mean you need time? You've had weeks to adjust to her being back and knew this conversation had to happen at some point, right? I don't get what they're going for here.
And her whole issue with, oh, but we've been through so much together.
Yeah. What have you been through?
Like, what? Were there parts in reality space that we didn't see where you were together? Or,
well, that's kind of what this feels like, doesn't it? It feels like stuff's gone on off screen that we've not seen. And yeah. I think it's something that I mentioned last week where it feels like they were trying to play it as an affair. And this week it's confirmed. They're trying to play it as an affair, but they've not had an affair, but they've had this strong connection because they were both addicted to MySpace, I'm going to call it.
Yeah, but it does feel like that, like they continued their relationship in reality space or something.
But they didn't. It was just that they shared
this connection.
But you would be, I mean, I agree with you, Sabine. That's the way that it's written. But I mean, none of it makes any sense. Like, Liz, you're spot on when you say, what is the timeline of this? And why do they only feel like this now? Because the thing is, maybe you could argue the point that May has been experimented on. She's been in such a state. She's been deep into reality space addiction that she's only come to her senses now and noticed that Pride and Celine are in a relationship and actually felt something about that. But what's Pride's excuse?
Yeah, but come on. She helped Pride sell Celine's jewellery.
Yeah, but exactly. But
I don't even blame May because Pride can't even say I'm in a relationship with Celine. So I don't even blame May at all. In
no, this. I don't think you should ever blame May.
No.
She's always
right. Tell her that you're in a relationship with Celine. You can't even say it. He's like, I need the time to think. I've got to think about this. I'll come back a bit later. It's like, the way you're playing is like, what? I don't get it.
That was a spot on impression, Lance.
I was going to say, hang on. You can do that and you weren't going to tell us.
Oh, man.
It's been 84 years.
It's so ridiculous. Oh my gosh. Okay. Yeah, you know, we're supposed to feel bad that he wasn't actually playing the game, but Celine is just like, I don't trust you, which is one of the most logical things she said in their whole relationship. like, it's about time you realize you can't trust this guy. And so I was like, kudos to her, you know, but I know the narrative wants us to feel bad for Pride because he didn't do anything wrong this time. And she's just like, no, I don't believe you. That's the problem. I can't be with you because I literally don't believe you. I wish you were deeper, you know, because again, his deceptive behavior is a complete great reflection of hers in season two, not all of season two, but when she stopped feeling it for Ryan and realized she still liked Bray, everything about her became deceptive. And they could have explored the fact that she's been on the other shoe. She's done this to somebody else and now it's being done to her. And how does that make her feel about it? Da, da, da. And instead, it's almost like the narrative wants us to think that Celine's being irrational by ending their relationship. and poor Pride. And it's like, no, it's about time she realized this guy can't be trusted. He's been lying to you since the day you guys met.
Plus, she knows what it's like to have an addiction to something. Sure, in her case, it was an illness, but she knows what it is to fight something that you feel like you have no control over. So I totally get her not trusting him.
Yeah, she knows what it's like, the lies you're willing to tell to people to hide what you're doing, even when you claim you're doing better, even when you've asked for help. She's been through it. She knows. And I was just like, I mean, there were plenty of times she should have already broken up with this guy. So it's about time. But again, remember, within 5 episodes, sometime in the background, this guy's supposed to have asked her to marry him. So she's supposed to have said yes. I'm trying to remember the rest of this relationship or the rest of the season, because season 5 starts with her getting kidnapped, you know? And so I'm just like, when did things get good in the next 5 episodes where he felt that was a good question to ask her and she was cool with it and accepted it?
maybe he just assumed that by asking her to marry him, she would trust him again.
And it apparently worked.
Because he's that much of an optimist.
I've also just realised that if that is the timeline, it means that in less than 5 episodes, that's going to be the last time she ever sees him.
Which is a good thing.
I mean, it is.
You cannot set up this kind of conflict in a relationship. And remember, this is a long-running conflict, okay? Of Pride not supporting her, of him sidelining her whenever there's another woman in the picture, flipping out, freaking out, just not emotionally dependable at all. Just a friggin' albatross around her neck for most of this season. And yet, in 5 episodes, he's going to propose and she's going to be like, you know what? We should totally spend our lives together. It's all solved. All of our issues are solved. It's insanity. Yeah, she'll probably make up with them next episode and May will be the problem. Not all of their myriad of issues. It'll just be May. May will be the conflict by next episode.
Oh, definitely. That is definitely what is going to happen. Because if we know one thing about the tribe, it's always her fault.
Mm-hmm.
And by her, I mean women.
Yeah. If it's not Trudy, it's got to be me.
Yeah, it's always the woman. She's always the problem.
It's never the guy just being a douche. It's definitely always another woman who's the problem.
Yeah, it's funny when you look at the relationships going on with Pride and then you look over at Jay. They never get blame for anything that's going to happen.
Because they're perfect.
Funny that.
I mean, that continues in the fandom as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't wait till we stop talking about Pride.
I'm almost
so over him now. Like,
almost dead.
Think about how fast into the season we started wishing for this man's death.
Yeah. But think about how fast he went down. Think about how fast he went downhill.
He went
in season 3.
Right.
I mean,
he cratered, man, almost immediately.
Mask off moments.
He entered on a high and he left on a downer.
He just kept going lower. And look, they gave him a whole season to be at his lowest. Like, oh my word.
Makes me wonder what Nick did to them.
I was going to say, I'm the one to Nick when to leave because, like, no, I'm done. Get me out of here.
And it's weird because it's clear they didn't hate him because the narrative's always trying to be on his side. So this isn't even like a Trudy situation where it's like, no, they just hate Trudy. Like, they wrote Trudy just like an hate on her. No, with Pride, they destroyed his character, but it wasn't out of hatred. They must have thought this was relatable or something. And because the narrative has always tried to paint it as Pride, it's not his fault that he feels this way or that he acts this way. He just needs a little patience and understanding.
Poor Pride, he can't help it. It's Ram's fault.
It's Ram's fault. It's May's fault. It's everybody else's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, with how long people blame May for this?
Oh.
Mm.
And for what's to come? Yeah.
I mean, she does get him killed.
I was kidding. Yeah, there's a little bit of...
Yeah, like, I mean, she's not to blame for this right here, but she does get him killed.
Yeah.
This isn't even... It's not even like where Dal, where she could not have predicted that Dal would throw himself off a car park. This time, she literally got Rye killed. It's funny because she was aiming to get Celine killed.
Yeah.
So, you can definitely blame her for the way that went down. It wasn't necessary. At least with Dal, it was like she was trying to protect herself from the Guardian. You know what I mean? And she's enslaved, all that stuff, and you don't know how people handle pressure. This time, she was just like, no, you have to kill Celine. And Pride was like, Pikachu face? And then he died. Totally her fault.
I just want to say... May deserves a medal because thank God he's gone. When he goes, I'm gonna give him like a victory party.
Maybe if she wasn't trying to kill Celine, I would give her that medal.
Uh-huh.
But she was trying to have Celine murdered.
If it had just been okay, Pride, I'm done with you. I want Celine for myself, not Sharon. Sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great.
My God, though, doesn't this create an amazing mythology for Selena May, though?
Oh, it does. Because she's always had a weird, like, her and Selena's relationship is interesting. It goes deep, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, from the moment she met Selena, she was oddly, you know, devoted to her. You know, except for this, all of a sudden she'll have a short span where right at the tail end of season 4 and the beginning of season 5, she hated her enough for her to die. And by the end of season 5, this woman is selling herself to buy Celine medicine. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, she's right back to being totally devoted. So it's just interesting.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, from Celine, she shares more with May. She tells May more of the stuff that's going on. And she tells anyone else. Mm-hmm. She really opens up to her.
Yeah, but he'll be dead soon, guys.
I can't wait. I'm counting it down. I am counting it down.
Not long left to go.
It's about 10 episodes, isn't it?
And I guarantee that this is one of those few disappearances, few character deaths that the actor begged for. Because think about it. Actors have left the show and they have not wanted to kill them off since, beginning of season 2. They've not wanted to do it because they don't want to commit to it, killing a character off. So it's like, it's very rare they do it. They need to know absolutely sure that the actor is never coming back. You know what I mean? Most characters just disappear. That's it. I mean, that's all season 4 has really been. Characters disappearing. Has anybody actually died, you know, in season 4? And the fact that Pride dies so definitively tells me Nick said, I'm not coming back. Okay. Kill me off.
Right? Yep.
Well, to be fair, if you would have been written like that, you'd say, please kill me off.
Yeah.
Just end it already.
Please end. Put me out of my misery. What have you done to my character?
And we can't blame him for that.
Mm-mm.
No.
Someone had to put an end to this. Because I guarantee his writing wasn't going to get any better.
No, but he's had more to do than a lot of the other characters.
Yeah, and this is what they chose to give him to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just think about that. A lot of them didn't have anything to do. But if this would have been the level... they would have gotten, then they're better off not having anything to do.
Yeah.
I always feel bad for actors who sign up for a show and think about it. They accept the role because they like the way the character was written. So if you sign up to play a douchebag or just a broken mess, you know what you're going into. But if you signed up to play a noble character the way Pride was first introduced and that this is what you've turned into... at the end of the day, you didn't sign up for this, you know, this part. You're like, whoa, you know, I want out of this contract. And thinking about how many performers that happens to, especially in a TV show, because you can't foretell how long the show will go and how the writing will go. But you signed on for the initial, pitch of the character. You're like, I like that. That's what I want to be, that person, you know. And then something like this happens and you're just like, please kill me. Please kill me.
Alright, cool. On that note, that brings Series 4, Episode 47 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 48. So until then, bye.
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 Bye.